Welcome to the Christadelphian Classics podcast, brought to you by Wilderness Voice. Principles and Proverbs by Islip Collier, Part 1, Principles, Chapter 1, Guidance in Life. If a man is well equipped with a knowledge of principles, he's in a favourable position for dealing with all the difficulties of life. He may find himself confronted by entirely new circumstances. There may be nothing in empirically gained knowledge to throw the slightest light on his path, but he can nearly always find a principle to help his judgment. Principles are like stars, constant and comprehensive, but not local or particular. The pilot, with only local knowledge, may guide the ship through the well-known channel and into the old port, but a knowledge of the stars is necessary when sailing in unknown seas. If a pilot should mistake a foreign port for the one he knows and attempts to guide the vessel according to the old rules, he'll bring it to disaster. Ships of various kinds have been wrecked through such mistaken confidence. Oftentimes, men have ignored principles and have applied the lessons learned in former years to circumstances that are totally different. They've even quoted the words of former leaders in a manner that would horrify such leaders could they rise from their graves and witness the application. It is sometimes a valuable exercise to turn away from the troubles and perplexities of the moment and look at general principles. Cease for a time from strife regarding matters which may have been agitating us most, and examine the fundamentals of truth, regarding which all should be able to agree. It is, of course, hardly possible at any time to either write or read with entire impartiality. Only a few men have a passionate desire to be on the side of truth, although all men want truth to be on their side. In discussion, the arguments are selected according to the purpose they will serve, and very few disputants of this world would be honest enough to make candid confession if they chanced to think of a point materially weakening their position. So, in dealing with principles, the inevitable tendency is to think of those first which supply a foundation for one's own position, while in reading, there is the equally strong temptation to accept or reject according to the probable bearing of the principle advanced on the particular prejudice uppermost for the moment in the mind of the reader. Let us frankly admit this weakness of our common nature and then try to be as honest and fair as we can. Let us admit at least the abstract possibility that we might be wrong and that the close examination of principles is necessary to correct us. If you think that the greatest fault is that we have forgotten the foundation lesson of all and are woefully lacking in love and mercy, do not on that account refuse to consider the sterner principles that may be urged. Recognize the abstract possibility that a man might be so anxious to show his love for mankind as to forget his duty to God. If, on the other hand, your favourite passage of Scripture has been first pure, then peaceable, do not get angry at the repeated exhortation, love one another. For love is always the greatest thing in the world, while anger is not always even pure. With an effort, we may be able to examine principles with a minimum of prejudice and with human feeling so well in hand that real benefit may be gained. What do we mean when we speak of a principle? The word is closely allied to the word first, but we employ it in such a sense that we can speak of first principles without tautology or contradiction. A principle is first in the sense of having to do with the foundations or beginnings of things. One principle may be the basis of many laws or rules of conduct. But although principles are causes, they are generally seen last of all. We climb up to an appreciation of them through many stages, And if we were dependent on our own observations, life would be too short for us to grasp a single one of them. A child looks on the world and sees objects. Strictly speaking, all that a baby can do in starting thought processes is to experience sensations. From this beginning, the process of thought is the same in all cases of progress through successive stages of development. We experience sensations and remember what we have sensated. We compare sensations and remember our comparisons. We classify and remember our classifications. Then, having produced a kind of platform of well-tested knowledge, we can build up again to a still higher plane. A child soon begins to act on some classifications based on observation and comparison. We should think a boy very stupid if he needed to tumble off every elevated object he encountered before knowing that there was any danger in climbing. A normal child, having experienced a number of painful bumps in falling from chairs and tables, will remember the lessons when he first has opportunity to climb a tree. He'll recognize a tendency for all unsupported objects to fall downwards long before he hears of the laws of gravitation. In this matter, adults often reveal less capacity for learning than children. They have the advantage of books containing all the accumulated wisdom of mankind, and beyond all this, and permeating a great deal of it, there is the instruction that has come direct from God. Yet, the knowledge is very little used. Life is full of avoidable evils through men ignoring principles or rules of conduct which are perfectly well known and which have had their wisdom demonstrated in every generation. Sometimes the individual failure is so obvious that almost all observers smile at it. I recall two instances of this kind in which the facts were related by the victim when sufficient time had passed for him to join in the amusement. The first was of a capable businessman who lightheartedly put his name to paper and became surety for another without even knowing the full extent of his commitment. As is usual in such cases, the one thus assisted failed to pay his way, and the guarantor was for some weeks on the verge of ruin, not knowing when the crushing blow would fall. While in this worried condition, he one day opened the Bible to find a little consolation, and almost the very first passage he read was the one in Proverbs warning men against the very folly he'd committed. "What a foolish man I am," he thought. "I have carelessly brought myself into this trouble when all the while the whole matter is explained in the Bible in the most up-to-date manner. If I'd read it before, I might have been warned." The other case was that of a young man who, when returning home one night, chanced to pass a low part of the city where there was a quarrel between a man and wife. The young fellow, perceiving that the woman was being ill-treated, gallantly went to her assistance. He was, as he expressed it, getting on very nicely in his contest with the man when the ungrateful woman came up behind and hit her champion on the head with a saucepan. According to his own account, the young man spent a carefree hour in the gutter before he came back to consciousness of this painful life. Then, as he limped slowly homeward, he began dimly to recall to memory certain maxims regarding the unwisdom of meddling with strife that does not belong to us. Perhaps we're confident that we should be wiser than this, and so far as these particular instances are concerned, the boast may be justified. But do we not all fall into similar errors, quite as inexcusable, and some of them provocative of more widespread evil? If a man's error causes derangement of many other brains, the consequences are perhaps more serious than if it had ended merely with a concussion of his own. And there are many failures to apply well-known maxims which result in widespread confusion of thought with seeming endless action and reaction of wrong thinking and wrong feeling. We've read many times that a soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. We know that the proverb is true. We may desire that wrath should be turned away. The stirring up of anger may be the last thing in the world that we should want, yet when the occasion comes, how many of us can find the soft, healing words? How many can resist the temptation to use grievous words if we chance to think of something which we consider apt and telling, and which in any case gives relief to the feeling of the moment? We know that all judgment has been committed to the Son of God, and that we're warned not to judge each other. We can all remember the instruction so easily when men try to measure our faults with the unfairness which is nearly always characteristic of human judges. Yet how difficult it is to refrain from judging others. There is a difference of opinion, and human mentality shows it at its worst. Instantly, there's a tendency to judge motives, to exaggerate faults, and to utter condemnations in a manner as if the Lord had never spoken. Some judge the faults or the supposed faults of weaker brethren. Others are busy judging the judges. It's quite difficult to steer a proper course, but we are all quite well acquainted with the guiding principles. Our difficulties would nearly vanish if we consulted principles more. We all know that balance is the first principle of life. Scripture tells us to be temperate and moderate and sober. We know from experience and observation how serious it may be for a man to become unbalanced and to be obsessed with a special line of thought. But we are all liable to such obsessions, and it's just at such times that we're the least interested in the principle of balance. We may easily become indignant with the man who tries to remind us of it. This is not the time to speak of moderation and temperate thought, we would say. This is a time of crisis when all our energy should be concentrated on, fill in the blank, with whatever dominates our thoughts for the moment. The fact is that our natural tendency is to ignore just principles, that we need most to study and to dwell on those which have most influenced us in the past and seem best to support our thoughts at the moment. The best corrective will surely be for us to look at as many principles as possible. Let us consider them all as fairly as we can. It will be too much to hope that the writer can be entirely unprejudiced in the presentation, or that his fairness would be admitted by all readers in any case. It will be too much to expect that readers will be able to divest themselves entirely of prejudice and to be as much interested in the principles that they most need to study as in those that they have emphasized too much. We can, however, make an effort in the right direction. To set an example to others who are palpably wrong, let us study scriptural principles and rules of conduct as if there were a possibility that we were wrong ourselves. If we make such an effort, a series of chapters on principles may be productive of a little good. Perhaps it would be unreasonable to expect more than this.